into a world where we fight to the finish. And at the heart of it is one recognizable image. Originators, titans of business, grand architects, respect.
Yes, yes, you are listening to the latest edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. My name is Kelson Mullen. Thanks so much for listening to the program. All of us at FCF appreciate it very much. Another great show for you. I've got Kenny Robertson, UFC welterweight, coming on the show. He's coming off a big, impressive win over Aldemar Alcantara at UFC 175. That's a couple of impressive victories for Kenny back-to-back now, so that's an interesting segment with him. You're not going to want to miss it. And then I've got Team Hayabusa's head striking coach, Pat Pitlick, coming on the show. He's also an active MMA fighter and kickboxer, so we talked to Pat about Team Hayabusa, his own background, striking and MMA, a whole list of issues, so you're not going to want to miss that either. So stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Yes, this is El Wapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mullen.
You can check out the best clothing with the most established logo in the MMA industry by going to the Full Contact Fighter shop. Just head to fcfighter.com and click on the shop tab to take a look at FCF's famous hoodies, t-shirts, shorts, among many other great items. You can order securely online at fcfighter.com or email fcfnews@aol.com.
It's my privilege to welcome back to the program Kenny Robertson, who's coming off a one-sided decision win over Aldemar Alcantara at UFC 175. Kenny joins us now from lovely Illinois, I'm assuming. Thanks for doing this, Kenny.
Oh, no problem.
You know, let's jump off with the big win. Like I said, one-sided decision win. He had a 30-26 scores. You've had a couple weeks now to think about the victory. How do you feel about your performance that night?
Pretty good. At first, I wasn't real, like, I didn't think I did enough, but after watching it, I was pretty happy with it.
What do you mean, at first you didn't think you did enough? Were you, because you didn't get the finish? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, you know, you always go for the finish, but not just that. You know, there's a couple times where I probably could have snuck in a couple punches more, but I was trying to, you know, I was a tough guy, so I didn't want to blow my gas tank. So I just wanted to be a little bit careful and make sure that I had some left at the end.
Mm-hmm. See, I think that's interesting because, you know, I thought some of the feedback I saw online, people were really impressed with the performance, and clearly, you know, getting the submission, you've had some highlight reel submission and stoppages in your career, but it was just such a one-sided performance. And like I said, 30-26 scores. So did you see or read any of the feedback, the credit you were given online?
Not really. I haven't really read any of it.
Okay.
I've been too busy working on the house.
Okay, yeah. Well, what was the game plan going in? It looked, I mean, you looked like you transitioned between your striking, you used your striking to set up the takedowns. I had the dominant top game, but what was the strategy going in?
That was pretty much it. Used the striking to close the distance and make sure that I set my shots up, which I don't always do very well. So make sure I set them up a little bit and you know, make sure that if I was in the clinch, so watch out for knees, and you know, if you do a knee, either block and return one or block it and take him down.
I know from talking to you in the past, might have even been after your last victory before this one. You talked about working on your striking, and that was something you've really been focusing on, not only to, you know, help your game up top, but to help set up the takedown. So do you feel like that there's been more progress made? It certainly seemed like it from this last performance.
Yeah, the strike, I think the biggest thing is I've had the tools to, you know, the strike. It's just a matter of being comfortable with it. So, you know, obviously if I get punched, I still take people down. You know, if I get hit hard or whatever and think that he's winning the stand-up fight, I'll always take somebody back down to the ground. But I felt like I was more relaxed. You know, that's the biggest thing with the striking is being able to do it actually in the cage. So I felt pretty good.
I know from talking to various wrestlers over the years, you know, it seems like that's sort of the last element that it takes some guys a long time to get used to that in terms of mixing in the striking, using it, set up takedowns, because clearly when you wrestle at the college level, high school level, that's not in play. Is how do you, when you're working on implementing that, what are some of the keys that you have to do in training, and how do you, is it through just coaching, is it just through drilling, through learning certain techniques? Talk a little bit about that if you can.
I think it's more mentally. It's a mental thing to be able to just, you know, to relax your shoulders and everything, because wrestling is such a tense sport where you do have to be a little relaxed, but like striking, you got to be able to snap out your punches and your kicks and transition and move. And for me, it was just a drill, 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 you know, pad work, pad work, pad work, spar, you know, be able to go with good people and everything.
Mm-hmm. And I guess part of it as well is, you know, I'm guessing in a wrestling match, you know, it's kind of reflex when you wrestle, just to shoot him for a takedown. But if you do that in MMA without setting it up, sometimes you can get caught.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that's the same thing too with your striking. It should be reflex, but you know, you just have to drill it enough. I'm finally getting to the point where my combos are coming just naturally. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. Have you seen, have you noticed, it seems like everybody across MMA has really noticed how guys who don't even come from a wrestling background are really improving their wrestling skills?
Oh, definitely. Especially their, just, you know, their takedown defense.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, like, when I practice my takedowns, I always make sure I get the second and third attempt. You know, you can't just blast double somebody into a cage and take them down anymore. You got to blast them, try to dump them with a single leg, come up with a punch or two, come back down. So, I mean, those are all things you have to drill, because everyone's got good takedown defense now.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that's what makes the implementing and moving in the striking that much more important in terms of getting the takedowns. Because like you said, especially on the takedown defense, outside of it, it seems like guys are really able to improve that. Is that much easier to learn, in your opinion, than learning when to time takedowns and the offensive side of wrestling?
Yeah, I definitely think that the defensive side is much, much easier to learn than to ever to learn how to be offensive, how to attack somebody, how to shoot, like just blasting through somebody. That's one of the hardest things. Like for me, when I teach people, that's hard to be like, well, how do you shoot? Well, I've been shooting since I was like 4 and a half, so it's not too hard. It comes natural to me, but, I mean, you get somebody that's never wrestled before trying to learn it, it's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about where you're at in your career in that right now? You've won 3 of your last 4. I know from talking to you before, you don't agree with the decision loss to Sean Pearson. So how do you feel things are going in your career right now?
Oh, they're going good, you know, baby steps. Hopefully I get I don't know about top 10, but somebody up there somewhere, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Guy to fight, so help me further my career. Life's good, man. Training's good. I had a bum shoulder for a while, but it's feeling much better, so yeah, life's good.
Yeah, and that leads into my next question, because I was going to ask you about what kind of opponent you'd like to take on next. Top 10 might be tough, I agree, but top 15 would seem within reach. Is this a kind of scenario where if you got an opportunity to step in for an injured opponent, something like that, I would think at least that circumstance has changed, where maybe you could get a top 10 opponent in that kind of scenario where a guy drops out and maybe you'd be willing to step in?
Yeah, I mean, I've stepped in quite a few times, so... there's been a few times where I've actually had, like, what, the 2 months or month and a half or whatever that you normally get. So that'd be fine for me. I mean, I fight anybody. That's just how I've always, you know, been, you know. You know, sometimes that's made me lose, but, you know, you can't always pick the easy guy. You got to go after the big dogs.
Do you get to a point, do you ever have people saying to you, look, Kenny, you got to start calling out guys? It seems like that's an ongoing debate in MMA, right? You've got the Conor McGregors of the sport who are rising up the ranks, some say rising up too quickly because of their charismatic personalities, because they can trash talk. And then you've got a lot of established vets who just don't want to go that route. Where do you, you know, you don't have a history of trash talking, so I'm guessing you fall more at the latter.
Yeah, I don't really talk a whole lot of crap. I figure you're going to take care of it when you're out there in the cage. Some people get emotional and get frustrated. I mean, either way, you're going to go in there and try to rip each other's head off. So what's the difference whether you're talking shit or not, you know?
Mm-hmm. But I think you'd probably, would you agree that the guys that have, that are doing the trash talking, some of them are able to lock up high-profile opportunities more quickly?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it is an entertainment, you know, it's an entertainment sport, you know, it's not, I mean, it's, it'd be great if everyone knew that, you know, all the techniques and everything, and just enjoyed the fighting. But sometimes that trash talking will get an extra, you know, 100 people to watch or 100,000 people to watch, you know. So, I mean, I understand why they kind of promote them up a little bit quicker, but that's just not something that I don't do. So I'm not too worried about learning how to talk crap at this point in my career.
Just a couple more questions for you. Speaking of guys who don't really trash talk, and that's welterweight champ Johnny Hendricks, you fellow wrestler like yourself, what's your assessment of him, and do you see him holding down the belt for a while, or do you see some other guys, maybe even yourself, that could give him a run for his money?
You know, you got to think that last fight, Robbie was 2 minutes away from winning the belt, and they just ran a little short. You know, I thought that they were two rounds apiece, and Robbie was winning the first half of the fifth round, and then, you know, then Johnny turned it on and took him down and kind of held him there, and, you know, that was it. So I definitely think he can get beat, but most likely I think he'll hold on to it for a couple more fights.
Mm-hmm. Last question for you. How are you doing health-wise? You mentioned having the hurt shoulder in the past, but did you come out of UFC 175 health-free and healthy? And the second part to that is, when would you like to fight next?
I'm good. I got a suspension for my elbow, but I actually have my doctor's appointment tomorrow. It's fine. I've been hitting pads with it and snapping elbows off and everything, so it's fine. I feel healthy. No real dings at all on that one, so that's good. I don't care where I fight. I wouldn't mind staying in the States because it's a little bit easier to travel, and you don't have to use your passports out and visas and 10-hour flights and all that. But
yeah,
you know, I wouldn't mind fighting in Chicago. It's only about 3 hours away from my house. So,
when would you like to fight? Are you hoping to get back in there, say, early fall?
Yeah, I mean, the sooner the better. I mean, now that it's been a couple, you know, it's been, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks or something like that, time's been flying by so quick, lost track. But I've been, you know, I've still been working out. It's not like I've been sitting around drinking beer and not doing anything.
Right.
But I've been working out still pretty hard. I'm going to pick it back up full swing next week and get back at it, so that when maybe I do get that last second call, you know, I'll be ready for it. I would, you know, a month and a half, 3 months, 4 months, wherever. Okay. I would say at least a month and a half out.
Yeah. Well, it was an impressive win, and I think I wouldn't be surprised at all if you get matched up against someone established floating around that top 15 region next. So thanks so much for doing this, Kenny, and best of luck in whatever comes next.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio. Please enjoy.
Joining the show now is Pat Pitlick, who is the head striking coach for Team Hayabusa and also professional Muay Thai and MMA fighter. Pat joins us now from Central Alberta. Thanks so much for doing this, Pat.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Let's start off with, you know, your role at Team Hayabusa. How long have you been with the team, and when were you, you know, given the head striking coach position?
About 8 months now. When I first came here, you know, I have a lot more experience than any of the guys as far as striking goes. And I got laid off my job because originally I came out here just to work in the trades.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke gave me an offer to work at Hayabusa, and yeah, I just ran with it.
Nice. So it's how did you start training there, and then they kind of, you know, saw that you knew what you were doing and offered you the position?
Yeah, it was a little bit of word of mouth too, but yeah, pretty quickly. We had a few of the guys that were competing when I came here. And, you know, I just wanted to be a fellow athlete and help someone out with the fights. And, you know, one thing led to another, and, yeah, they hired me here.
Now, you've got your own aspirations in terms of your fighting career, but this has got to be a pretty, I'm guessing, a pretty big accomplishment and a nice addition to your resume, right? I mean, Team Hayabusa, a lot of well-known fighters, one of Canada's best teams. So to be the head striking coach has got to be a pretty nice accomplishment.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I really enjoy working with the guys. You know, it's rewarding to see them do the stuff you teach them, especially on when they do it to you.
So for people that aren't familiar with your background, then maybe just quickly run down, you know, how you got into kickboxing and you know, how long you've been involved in the sport.
Well, like most guys that do MMA or fighting in any term, like boxing, kickboxing, taekwondo or judo or any of that stuff, usually they need an outlet. And for me, Muay Thai was like my outlet. And I really only wanted to do it for fitness. But, you know, I stayed at the gym long enough, and I became pretty good, and ended up having almost 40 fights. And then I fought a few professionally, and I came out here and, you know, tried the MMA, and, you know, so far I've excelled at that too.
In terms of, you know, how you transition from kickboxing to MMA, I know from a fighting perspective, you know, there's some obvious elements there in terms of you have to start learning wrestling, ground game, etc. But as a coach, that's got to be an interesting transition to go from adapting not only techniques that you normally would use in kickboxing to MMA, but then evaluating your student's style, right? How they can incorporate it and you striking Muay Thai techniques that work in an MMA environment.
Well, what happened was when I first started coaching here, I felt like I couldn't show guys kickboxing, Muay Thai stuff because they were fighting MMA unless I experienced it. So my pro debut was after only 4 months' experience of learning wrestling and jiu-jitsu.
Oh, wow.
And I just wanted to jump right in there, you know, because I didn't feel comfortable showing techniques that possibly wouldn't work. And when I went in there and I fought, you know, I learned, you know, you learn as you go, but I learned what works really well and what maybe not as much, or what's a little bit more risky. And yeah, like I insisted that I could fight, wanted to fight right away, just, you know, just to get in there.
Mm-hmm.
But Luke Harris is he's a hell of a coach, you know. After 2 months' experience, I did my first grappling tournament, and I won 2 gold medals. 3 months, I won another 3 gold medals, and, you know, those are the only tournaments I've done. I cleaned up, I think out of the 16 guys that I rolled against, I submitted 11 of them.
That's incredible, and that's, you know, like, that's all your jiu-jitsu training to date was just a few months?
Yeah, that was just from you know, rolling with Luke and all the guys. But you got to understand, I'm going with, you know, professional fighters all the time, and I'm getting, you know, tapped out, beat up, thrown around. So when you go to a tournament against, you know, guys that have equal experience, it's pretty easy.
What did you?
Or at least so far.
Did you enjoy? Have you enjoyed that side of the game? I mean, obviously there's some high level strikers out there. Pat Barry, maybe among the most well known, who, you know, always talked about how he hated going to training for wrestling and jiu-jitsu, and he just wanted to focus on striking, and now he's returned to kickboxing. How did you enjoy the process of learning the other, you know, all the aspects of MMA?
Well, a lot of guys that are, like, top dogs at their gym, you know, they're considered, like, the best at the gym. They got that ego, you know, they feel like, oh, I'm the best, and I'm this and I'm that. And then when they go to a jiu-jitsu gym, and they just get, you know, humiliated, just beat up by everybody, I can see why a lot of them don't want to stick with MMA. But for me, I never had that ego. You know, I never felt like that. For me, when I came here and I got taken down or thrown around or tapped out, I just wanted to get better, you know. I didn't want to be the bottom feeder, you know. I wanted to be the goldfish.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
What are some of the most obvious things for people that maybe haven't done a lot of MMA training when you come from a kickboxing background and transition into MMA? What are some of the basic things that need to be adjusted right away? I would imagine the stance is right up there.
Yeah. When I first came, I had like the traditional Thai stance. When I'd kick, I'd be up really tall,
mm-hmm.
and I'd sit down on my punches. But when I tried that with, you know, doing MMA sparring, I'd just get, you know, I'd hit the guy and I'd still get taken down. And I've lowered my stance. I adjusted a lot of things. But if you don't learn the wrestling, it doesn't matter how good of a striker you are.
Yeah.
Getting taken down and having somebody on top of you, you know, beating you up is a terrible feeling.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of clinch techniques, obviously we see that at MMA. Some guys use the Muay Thai plum very effectively, and the elbows from the clinch, the knees from the clinch. Very important game, side of the game. What are some adjustments you have to make going from a Muay Thai setting into an MMA fight?
Well, so far in my last fight, the clinch is actually what won me the fight because it seemed like my opponent did not know how to deal with elbows, strikes, knees. I used all my wrestling techniques I learned from here when he shot in on me.
Mm-hmm.
But once the hands went up, like towards my head, that was it. He didn't know what to do. But yeah, so far everything's okay.
Now, in terms of the Team Hayabusa camp, obviously a lot of great fighters out of there. Luke Harris, among several. He's someone who is, you know, world class grappling game, jiu-jitsu black belt, judo black belt. And I'm guessing you've spent a lot of time working with him. Do you still feel like he's got some big fights ahead of him? He competed on Tough Nations, isn't back in the UFC, but do you feel, so what are some of the improvements you've seen in his game since you've been with him?
Yeah, his striking is getting a lot better. You know, I can see him having a lot more fights if he really wanted to. You know, that was just a fluke on that show. You know, he just got caught with something.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't really judge Luke for his last performance, because overall he's pretty much finished every fight he's ever won in the first round, and now he's focusing so much on his stand up, and you know, when you see him fight again, you'll definitely see the change. I'm sure of it.
One guy that I've been monitoring, and I think a lot of hardcore observers of Canadian MMA, is Roger Alves, one of the very accomplished wrestler up here in Canada, fought in MMA years and years ago, now has returned, and he's fighting with World Series of Fighting, he has a win. We've had him on the show. I think he's actually the wrestling coach at Team Hayabusa. What's your take on his development as a fighter?
Oh, yeah, his boxing right now is really crisp. Overall, yeah, his overall game is really good. He's just very hard to deal with. You know, we do MMA sparring, and he's a lot smaller and shorter than most of the guys we train with, and he can make a lot of them look pretty stupid, mm-hmm. me included.
Who are some other guys that fans should be, you know, keeping an eye out for coming out of Hayabusa in the coming months?
Oh, there's so many.
Yeah.
Mike Scarcello, Miles Anstead. KB Buehler. We got such a tough team right now. It's Tanner Bozer, of course. How could I forget about Tanner?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got so many good guys. It's ridiculous.
Something else I wanted to ask you too is, you know, you mentioned you've had 40 fights in Muay Thai, several pro fights. You're getting into MMA as well. This is an interesting time, I'm guessing, for kickboxers, because you have Glory around in the picture now. You have Lion Fight. It seems like there's a bit of a resurgence in kickboxing here in North America. It's always, I think, been bigger globally, but now it seems like there's opportunities that weren't there before for kickboxers. We've had several Glory roster members on the show in recent weeks, and they say that. So is this kind of an interesting time for you? Are you at a sort of a crossroads, or are you planning to take pro kickboxing fights as well as MMA, or what's the plan there?
Yeah, I just love to fight, really. I have opportunities, and I have people that could get me pro fights here in Alberta. If I wanted to go back to Muay Thai or just kickboxing or K-1 rules or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I just love to fight. You know, I told Luke, you know, I'd fight anybody. I'd take any fight. And for me, that's it's not about the fame. I just genuinely love to fight. I love to get in there, you know. I love to be that that guy that everyone's watching, you know. Win, lose, or draw, it's always a hell of a time.
What's been your take on the growth of Glory? They've made a lot of headlines. I think they had a bit of a setback with that recent pay-per-view. The numbers came out, and they weren't pretty disappointing by all reports. But aside from that, they've had a lot of ratings hits on Spike. Have you enjoyed watching Glory, and are you happy to see them around?
Yeah, I love watching all that stuff, you know, and it's funny, the popularity, you're right, the popularity of kickboxing is people are starting to recognize it. You should probably ask any MMA fan like 10 years ago, nobody would know what the hell K1 was or any of that. Nobody would have watched any of that stuff. But the development is shocking. I can only see it grow from here.
Last question for you. What's coming up in your schedule? I believe you've got a fight scheduled for September, right?
Yeah, I took another one. September 19th in Fort Mac. I'm fighting a guy, Travis Moritz. So I'm gonna, go there, take him out, and come home, represent my gym.
Well, best of luck, Pat, with that upcoming fight, and best of luck with this new position. I guess it's not so new. You've been doing it for almost a year now, but congrats on the position, and we look forward to seeing what comes next for you and Team Hayabusa.
All right, thank you. Take care.
To a world where we fight to the finish, and at the heart of it is one recognizable image. Originators, titans of business, brand architects, respected since 9-7. Sky's the limit and legend behind the logo. Joe Gold, feel the full contact, fight a Joe Cole. Reloaded for the new gen, the Superman on the road home. Did it once, we'll do it again. Come on,
contact fighter,
get up.
We gladiators, spark the
warriors.
Remember the Titans.
Full contact fighter.
Get up.
We gladiators, Spartans. As the heat of the battle heightens, everybody's fighting except for the
Minnepata.
We are
warriors.
At the undefeated time at the top, now we're eyeing the clock. Eager to strike while the iron is hot. It's like we got it in a triangle lock. Everybody's buying our stock. Hardcore kings of the cage apparel, certified since we gave Couture the nickname The Natural. International level, live for the sport, die for the dream, fight for your life by any means. It's full
contact,
get up.
We gladiators, Spartans,
warriors.
As the heat of the battle heightens, everybody's fighting except for the
Minnepata.
Remember the Titans,
full contact fighter,
get up.
We gladiators, Spartans. As the heat of the battle heightens, everybody's fighting except for the
Minnepata.
We are
warriors.